are tuned KBOO Portland, and do stay tuned for Between the Lines, and that'll be coming up right after these messages.
KBOO's mini December drive is right around the corner. It will start on Thursday, December 4th and end on Saturday, December 6th. We are looking to raise $20,000 over these 3 days. We're also happy to announce that we have secured a $5,000 match thanks to the generosity of the Juan Young Trust, Vernier Software, SSI Shredding Systems, and the Wendy Foundation. This means if you've never given to KBOO, your donation will be doubled. If you give to us monthly and you give an additional one-time gift, that donation will be matched. If you give more to us this year than last year, then the difference will be matched. You can donate early by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you for supporting your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
On December 1st at 6:30 p.m., tune in to Prison Pipeline. We'll be discussing decriminalizing homelessness with Portland area activists Monica Beamer and Ibrahim Mubarak. They're members of the Western Regional Advocacy Project and are involved with a homeless Bill of Rights campaign, which would protect the rights of all persons to rest. We discuss how people with prior records are vulnerable to becoming houseless, and the history of vulnerable populations being criminalized, as well as how our society could save money by protecting, rather than criminalizing, people who do not have a safe place to sleep. Tune in on December 1st at 6:30 p.m.
And as you've heard, Air Cascadia is off today, and we're going to hear Between the Lines. That is coming up right now. This has stories on how pro-choice activists are bracing for renewed efforts to further erode access to abortion, and how immigrant activists are agitating for comprehensive immigration reform. So stay tuned to KBOO all morning.
The past 2 years have seen escalating attacks on abortion rights at the state level, as conservative majorities took control of many state legislatures and governor's offices. According to the Guttmacher Institute, more anti-choice legislation was passed between 2011 and 2013 than in the previous 10 years. Now, in the wake of the 2014 midterm elections, Republican majorities and supermajorities will be taking control of even more legislatures, and additional Republican governors have been elected to office. While anti-abortion activists in Tennessee celebrated state voters' November 5th passage of Amendment 1, a measure that gives state lawmakers more power to restrict abortions, pro-choice groups took credit for defeating so-called personhood ballot initiatives in Colorado and North Dakota, which would have granted rights to human embryos and fetuses. Although the issue of reproductive rights were not the focus of most campaign debates in this election, just as they were barely mentioned in the 2010 midterms, once in office, many GOP legislators have made attacks on abortion rights and birth control a priority agenda item. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Amanda Allen, state legislative counsel with the Center for Reproductive Rights. Here she explains why many pro-choice activists are bracing for renewed efforts to further restrict women's access to abortion when newly elected conservative politicians take office.
We will see a majority of anti-choice governors moving into the 2015 session, and we will also see a majority of state legislatures governed by two houses that are likely to be anti-choice. What really happened this election is we lost ground in a couple of states that really had legislatures that were mixed choice, that maybe weren't super, super hard right anti-abortion, but that could be moving in that direction. And so that is one of the reasons why we think that we might be seeing more state legislatures that are, on the whole, more anti-choice. So we've really seen abortion access limited to a very severe degree in states where there's only one clinic left. And those states are North Dakota, South Dakota, Mississippi, Missouri, and Wyoming. North Dakota in particular, every year that their legislature is in session, their legislators come in and propose and pass bill after bill after bill, really, really directly attacking that remaining abortion clinic in the state. You might recall that North Dakota faced a 6-week abortion ban last year that the Center for Reproductive Rights successfully got a federal court to block. That was one of several anti-abortion bills considered by the North Dakota legislature last year. Now, North Dakota only meets every other year, and so we did not see those types of restrictions in North Dakota this year, but we are absolutely gearing up for another tough session there. Also, Mississippi. Mississippi is another of the states that has only one abortion clinic left, and that clinic is also hanging on by a court order. The Mississippi legislature back in 2012 passed a law that sounds like a good idea. It requires abortion providers to have local hospital admitting privileges. And part of the strategy is to make that kind of requirement sound benign and sound easy to comply with. But of course, the providers in the state have been unable to obtain privileges, not because they provide substandard care, but because the abortion is such a politicized issue in the state that not a single hospital would grant those privileges. And so we've got a federal court order blocking that requirement from taking effect. But like I said, that clinic is also hanging on by a court order. And so those are just a couple examples of states in our country where abortion access really is depending on a woman's zip code and where she lives.
Amanda Allen, I know abortion rights had majority support among American voters for decades, but I think that's changed.
Well, the polling is actually very compelling on this question. 7 in 10 Americans do not believe that abortion should be banned and do not believe that Roe versus Wade should be overturned. So those are the polling figures that we have. The other thing I would like to say is that, by and large, this election, when abortion rights and when reproductive health were squarely before voters as an issue, we won. And there are two compelling examples of that at the ballot box in North Dakota and in Colorado. Voters in both of those states faced a question about whether they wanted to insert fetal personhood language into their state constitutions, which would, of course, ban abortion and could possibly ban other very common forms of contraception, and in North Dakota even impact things like end-of-life care. And so in both instances this election, voters overwhelmingly rejected those. And so I think that really supports the overall numbers that we have on our side, which is, again, to say that 7 in 10 Americans do not want to see their politicians meddling with the constitutional right to abortion. They do not want to see those constitutional protections be overturned.
But voters also support a lot of restrictions on access to abortion, right?
I think what we found is that when these issues are very can be very complicated, and our opposition has been able to frame their side as being on the side of women's health and safety. But I think what we've seen is that once voters hear that the impact of these laws and the intent of these laws is actually to make abortion so difficult to obtain that it becomes really a right on paper rather than a right in reality, that they don't support those kinds of measures.
That was Amanda Allen, state legislative counsel with the Center for Reproductive Rights. Find more news and commentary on the ongoing state and federal campaigns to erode abortion rights by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. President Obama announced his long-anticipated executive order on immigration in a televised address from the White House on November 20th. Undeterred by the Democrats' recent loss of the U.S. Senate in the midterm election, Mr. Obama offered temporary legal status to more than 4 million undocumented immigrants, along with an indefinite reprieve from deportation and the issuing of work permits. The response from the Republican Party was immediate and hostile, with GOP congressional leaders threatening to do everything possible to block Mr. Obama's initiative. A handful of conservative legislators talked about launching impeachment proceedings, while others openly discussed having the president arrested for violating the Constitution and predicted violence erupting across the country in response to the order. Your reporter spoke with Daniel Altshuler, Long Island coordinator with the immigrant rights group Make the Road New York, who examines the scope and impact of President Obama's executive order offering temporary legal status to millions of undocumented immigrants.
This is something with tremendous legal precedent, what the president has done. The president has the authority and the responsibility to enforce immigration laws and to also determine the priorities for how that's going to happen. And so this type of deferred action policy, these types of executive actions have been taken by Democratic and Republican presidents for decades. So this is something well within legal precedent, and we're very, you know, we're excited, and members of the immigrant community that we work with are excited that the president has opted to take action as previous presidents have done before.
So when Republicans complain that President Obama is acting like a king or an emperor, acting outside the Constitution and the law, threats of impeachment and imprisonment and all that, based primarily on the fact that they say he's granted amnesty. Do you take it as a deliberate misstatement of fact, given what we know about this executive order in black and white?
You know, it really is just political posturing. It is folks, particularly in the Republican leadership, who have failed to take action on this and frankly have, you know, there was a Senate bill that included a path to citizenship for 11 million undocumented people, as well as other provisions to fix our broken immigration system that passed overwhelmingly in the Senate almost a year and a half ago. And since then, since the bill moved over to the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, it went absolutely nowhere. And despite having the votes to pass, a vote was never allowed to take place. So this is political posturing by the same folks who refused to take action on this critical issue. And we are, again, excited about what the president has done, and we believe it is, you know, it is a really important step forward. It is not a panacea. It is not the final solution. Ultimately, we do need Congress to still legislate on this matter because, you know, the president acting alone is not able to grant citizenship to the millions of undocumented immigrants who live in this country. That is going to require an act of Congress.
Daniel, when you look to the future, an ongoing effort by many pro-immigration groups who are seeking a permanent solution to the immigration crisis in the country, how is it that you're going to pursue a campaign to ensure that some of the relief given by this executive order is transformed into something more permanent and, most importantly, a path to citizenship?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our organization and organizations like Make the Road New York around the country are committed to building a base within the community, that is to say, building membership-based organizations where immigrant New Yorkers, immigrant residents of Connecticut, immigrants from all over the country are able to speak for themselves and are able to articulate the needs of their community. And so, you know, this is an important step forward and an accomplishment for our movement. But what we also need to continue to do is use this as a movement-building moment where our organizations are able to continue to build and thrive and grow to be able to take this fight into the next congressional session that begins next year and make sure that we're able to both defend what has been done against any of these potential spurious attacks that you mentioned earlier and also continue to advocate for a broader solution in the months and years to come. And that's something that I think, you know, at the same time that we folks have been celebrating an accomplishment over the past week, they've also been rededicating themselves to the fight ahead.
That was Daniel Altshuler, Long Island coordinator with the immigrant rights group Make the Road New York. Find links to more discussion on the issue of comprehensive immigration reform by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Be a part of Giving Tuesday on December 2nd, a day that inspires personal philanthropy and encourages bigger, better, and smarter charitable giving during the holiday season. KBOO is excited to participate, and we have a $5,000 match for the month of December. All new memberships and additional donations made by current members will be matched. If you gave $60 last year and decide to give $100, it will be matched for the $40 increase. If you give monthly and give an additional one-time gift, that amount will be matched. Go to kboo.fm/give to make your donation now. And thank you to the Juan Young Trust, Vernier Software, SSI Shredding Systems, and the Wendy Foundation for empowering KBOO with their matching contributions. Thank you for your support.
Too much of nothing can make a man abuse a king. He can walk the streets and boast like most, but he won't know.
This is Ed Melnick, host of the singer-songwriter edition of the Monday Sampler, on the first Monday of every month between 2 and 4 p.m. I'd like to invite you to join me on December 1st for a very special Monday Sampler. In the second hour of the show, we'll be featuring Bob Dylan and the band, The Complete Basement Tapes. In this one-hour special, you'll hear many of the songs from the Basement Tapes, as well as insights from Dylan's biographer, Clinton Halen, producer Steve Berkowitz, and many others. Rita Houston narrates, tying the whole thing together. That's Monday, December 1st at 3 p.m., right here on the Monday Sampler.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, P.C., Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. This month, the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon celebrates its 30th anniversary. CUB has come a long way from its grassroots founding through